Hello there, and welcome to our podcast, Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso. Billy Murphy is from a place just outside of Glasgow, Scotland. And from all descriptions, it was certainly a tough place for a kid to grow up in. In this podcast, you'll hear about Billy's never-say-die attitude. He's the kind of bloke who rolls with the punches, dusts himself off, and keeps moving forward. On his arm are tattooed the words, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger." This podcast holds great inspirational lessons for anyone who runs their own business, or for those who simply want to live the best life they can. We started the podcast by talking about Billy's childhood.
Yep, Glasgow. Came from a little town outside Glasgow called East Kilbride. So majority of my life I grew up there. We're just about 20 minutes outside Glasgow city centre. But being lucky enough to live and work all over different parts of Glasgow. It's a fun place, mate. It's definitely got its own personality.
Glasgow. In what way?
The people, mate. There's a slogan in Glasgow, say the people make Glasgow. Oh, Glasgow is smiles better, you know, and it is Glasgow banter, so to speak, or the Glasgow people are just different class, mate, different class. And I think that's the thing a lot of expats miss the most. It's certainly not the weather. If you move across the world, you don't miss the Scottish weather, but you miss the Scottish banter, and especially Glasgow. Glasgow's just different, mate. It's very old school, industrial, kind of steel shipbuilding town.
Is it vastly different? Because I think I mentioned this to you the first time I found out you're from Scotland. Mm-hmm. I went to Edinburgh for a week for the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
But we did a little bit of travelling. We travelled from Edinburgh to Glasgow, and we stayed at a place called Dunfermline, which is in between.
Yep.
My impressions of heading to Edinburgh was, only because you mentioned that Glasgow is very industrial.
Yeah.
I remember Edinburgh being really green and lush. And
different, yeah. There's a huge difference between the two. You should never confuse anybody from Glasgow as being from Edinburgh.
Why is that? Is it like a...
It's an East Coast, West Coast thing.
Oh, is it?
I guess it's very much like the Queensland, New South Wales kind of thing. Right, very much enough. Like that. Edinburgh is the capital. It's very hard to find Scottish people in Edinburgh. You know, everyone's all came from all over the
outside
world. A lot of English, a lot of Americans. So it's a very touristy place because of the castle and different aspects of Edinburgh. But Glasgow's just different. Glasgow is very, very different. It's a very hard town, very tough place.
Can I talk about that? Because the other thing I heard, I don't know, are you into football, soccer?
Yeah.
People said, you don't want to go to some of the local games on the weekend. I said, yeah. They're tough, man.
Rangers and Celtic, that's the big derby. We call it the Old Firm derby.
Is there a bit of biffo like almost every weekend at those games? Is that true?
It's bad. Mate.
Really?
So when those two teams meet together,
yeah,
that's when stuff really kicks off. The sad part is it's a religious divide. You know that's what causes the problems. If you're a Protestant, you're more likely to be a Rangers fan.
Right.
If you're a Catholic, you're more likely to be a Celtic fan.
I didn't know that.
So that's the underlying reason. That's the underlying reason, mate. That's what causes most of the issue. I mean, they are. Up until recently, they were the two top teams in Scotland, and for years it was either Rangers or Celtic on top. There was nobody else would get a sniff. Rangers have had a little bit of trouble the last few years. So there's a rivalry because of the two best teams, but with the religious divide, that is a big thing as well.
Billy, when you mentioned hard though, what else were you thinking about?
I don't want to play it down, but Glasgow, it's a very violent city. And it always has been, even since the 30s and 40s, you had all your Glasgow Razor Kings. It was all open-back razor fights, and it's a very a lot of gang culture in Glasgow. That's something they're trying to do away with now, and they're trying to really soften it up a bit, maybe you could say. But it's a lot of knife crime.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of knife crime.
What kind of population are we talking about? How big is Glasgow?
Oh, mate, I'm not sure what the number is on it. I'm not sure what the number is, but...
Is it like the size of Brisbane, or is it...
Like Melbourne. It's very similar. When I went to Melbourne a few years ago, and there's a lot of similarities with Glasgow and Melbourne.
Yeah.
That kind of... a little bit industrial outside the city. You've got the trains running through the city.
So I
found it was quite similar in certain aspects. In the city centre, you've got the kind of grid-like typical city.
Yeah. Well, it was a planned city.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way it was, exactly. It was built.
So did you get into a lot of fights as a kid? Considering the kind of town and city you're describing.
Yeah, we did. You have your, I mean, first and foremost as a kid, football was a big thing. I mean, when you're from Glasgow, football's your first and foremost. That's all you want to do as a kid. You want to play football morning and night. But yeah, you get any scuffles here and there, mate. And again, there's that gang culture. If you're from a different area and somebody else isn't from your area, then that causes problems. It shouldn't, but it did back then. It's a lot better now. You know, it's a lot better now. But yeah, we're always getting involved in something silly.
Were you in a gang?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
If you're from a certain area, a built up area, then you have your own little gang, you know, and that's the thing that, yeah, it's kind of, that's not really an option, mate, you know, that's really it.
That's kind of a bit sad though, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And where I'm from, we didn't have it anywhere near as bad as some of my mates who grew up in Glasgow city itself. And I mean, those parts where they grew up in, they're tough. There's different parts outside of Glasgow, outside where I'm from, called Easterhouse and Coatbridge, and these places are a lot more impoverished as well, a lot more poverty in them. But the gang crime and the knife crime there is pretty sad, mate. Yeah, it's. Yeah.
And you still have family there?
All my family's
mum and
still
dad.
There. Yeah, mum and dad, sister still there, nieces and nephews, everyone's there. So I'd love to have them out here. It would be great.
Is that what you, when you talk to them about, considering we've just spoken about, you know, crime and how tough it is, especially for kids. I mean, you're talking about kids. And now you've kind of tasted this lifestyle and talking about your nieces and nephews. Yes. Is there kind of an urge or a desire, mate, to go, hey, you guys should make the move?
We'd love to have them out here purely because of their lifestyle in Glasgow. The thought of myself living back there and bringing kids up in Glasgow, I doubt I could do it. And that's the funny thing about it. Like, you drive 40 minutes outside of Glasgow, it's like a different planet. Yeah. It's like a different planet. You go up to the west coast, up to Loch Lomond and the shores up there, and even driving out up north or east of Glasgow, even south, it's different, mate. Glasgow's a little pocket of crazy in the middle.
So all those things those people told us when we were Dunfermline, that was kind of true.
All true.
So is there a big tourist industry at all for Glasgow?
Like, oh yeah, it's a huge. Lot of tourists, I mean, you see, when you look at Glasgow, it's a very popular city, very artsy. You've got a lot of amazing buildings in Glasgow. You've got the art galleries. You've got, it's very very metropolitan now, I guess. A lot of business districts. And they are trying to regenerate it a lot more. Having the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, that added a lot to
That's right. When was that?
2014, mate. 2014.
Oh, it was recently. Right.
Yeah, so having that, they put a lot of money back into the community. And they'd done up a lot of the city centre. They'd done a lot of houses up and things. And it made the place look a lot better. From the outside looking in, it was made to look a lot better. And but the Games was huge for Glasgow. It was awesome. And that was one of probably my highlights of my fitness career. I mean, I got to work at the Games. I was in charge of the athletes' warm-up and physical preparation tent at Hampden at the National Stadium. So I was working with the Jamaican team, the Aussie team, Scottish, English team, all working with African nations, it was phenomenal, mate. It was definitely the pinnacle.
What were you doing? Were you a personal trainer or?
So I was in charge of athlete development and pre and post warm ups and cool downs at the games.
Part of the 2014 Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, part of the Commonwealth team. So we'd be based in the gyms at Hampden Stadium, and the gym is open all day, so coaches would come in with their athletes. A lot of your more affluent nations had their own coaches and their own development programs and structures, but we were tasked a lot with working individually with athletes from your poorer nations, different republics in Africa and things like that. We were asked to look after these athletes and prepare them for their events and stuff, and that was just amazing to work with these guys so close and to hear the story of some of these African nations was, oh mate, it was heartbreaking. There's a few, like one of the guys I spoke to from Uganda, and we became really friendly with them because we were working closely with them. And the guy's dream was to own a metal flask, see, like a metal drinks bottle, That was his dream.
That's
because
it.
Because in Africa, they get a lot of glass and stuff, but it's very rocky. So when you've got your glass bottle, if you break it, you've no more water carrier, you know, no more water vessel. So I couldn't believe it. That was his dream. It was, I wanted to own a metal flask. And I remember being a day off during the games, and I went to one of the mountaineering stores and brought a bunch of these metal thermos flasks and gave it to all the Ugandan team. Yeah. Oh, mate, so emotional. These guys were breaking down, crying and busted. They'd never been gifted anything like that. And it was like £5, $8 a tin. It's nothing. Yeah. And that was these just made these people's day. Those other ones were when the guy, a team from Lethos in Africa, so one of the republics, seen for the first time a vending machine. So they walked into the gym and they found this strange glass cabinet full of drinks and crisps and chocolate, and they didn't know what it was, and we showed them, put money in it and food comes out, and they were dancing and running about getting all their friends to come and see it. And that put a lot of things in perspective for me, mate. Yeah. You think you've got a hard life growing up in Glasgow or different cities, and you've really got it pretty cruisy. You know, we laugh and joke about Glasgow being tough and certain parts of Scotland being, it's a hard life. But you look at some of these guys and girls and nothing, we've got nothing on them. You know,
It's all about playing the hand that you're dealt, isn't it?
Yeah, really. You've got to make the most of it, mate, you know.
Form of martial arts that you do, what do you call that?
Yeah, so I compete in Muay Thai. Yeah, it's based in Thailand. So it's discovered in Thailand. And that's it's called the art of eight limbs. So you use your hands, elbows, knees, legs. It's quite a brutal sport.
I just wanted to tie it back to the kind of growing up in the kind of place that you said you grew up. Was it tough? And you know, tough for kids.
Yeah.
Is that where you first kind of had to use your fists and?
Oh, yeah. Again, listen. I was one of the better ones. I wasn't fighting a lot of the time, mate. I was, you get into your scuffles here and there and at school and things
just
as well, of course.
Just to protect yourself.
Yeah, of course. I was never one for starting fights, never one for getting involved for no reason. I didn't like that. But if it came, then it was always fun to get involved. Yeah. it was years. I'd always been dabbled in something. I'd done judo with my uncle and stuff, and I had always boxed kind of because of just where you're from and you had a little play about. And it was, I was working in a fight gym, working with fighters, coaching them and get more from a fitness aspect. And my mate was fighting Thai. And he said, you need to come and try Muay Thai. You need to try it. And I was like, what's Muay Thai? And I started looking up. And I remember watching for the first time a famous Thai fighter, Ramon Dekkers, and one of Australia's finest prospects is John Wayne Parr. So watching John Wayne Parr and Ramon Dekkers fight just blew my mind. I was like, what is this? This is the sport for me. And I think it was the brutality of it that made me think that, yeah. And I've always joked about you have to have a little bit of something missing to do Muay Thai.
Why is that?
Because it's so brutal, mate. It's just, you're standing face to face with somebody, trading blows, fist to the head, elbows to the face, knees to the face, no padding. It's full on. And it takes a certain kind of person to enjoy Muay Thai, but I fell in love with it. I remember I'd done my very first training session, and my coach, who led a guy called Bobby Thompson, he wasn't there at the time. He was in Thailand, so I went to this gym and trained with some of the guys there, and they didn't know who I was, so it was right, pads, do some pads in my spa. And I thought, I'll get in and spa. And I got kicked about the place. I came out and I burst nose, my lips were all burst, I had black eyes, ribs were killing me, legs were on fire. And I remember going home with my dad going kind of, here you go, you're not going back there, are you? I went, are you kidding? I loved it. Can't wait.
So, but what was it? What was it that, obviously not the pain, but what was it that wanted you, made you go back and want to do it again?
I think it was the ability to just let it all out, just to fully fight and fight with your hands and your fists and your elbows and your knees and not get in trouble. That was something that kind of, and it sounds really bad, and hearing myself saying it sounds really strange, but fighting when you're young and stuff, you've always got that aspect in the back of the head, you're going to get caught, or you're going to hurt somebody, or you're going to, and you get in trouble for it. And then I found this sport where I could fight and let everything out, and that's what you're expected to do. You're expected to really go full on. And
well, I mentioned you got a fight coming up soon, which is in July.
Yeah, 7th of July.
But what, talk about, you look leaner than ever. You've even lost more weight than the last time I saw you.
I'm only 4 weeks out, so I'm pretty much at the top end of my weight cut. I'm about 6 kilos down just now, and I've got another 4 to go. So
what's the ideal kind of weight?
So I'll fight at 71 kilos. That's my weight category.
Yeah.
I'll fight at 71. The last four, I'll lose in water. I'll just dehydrate the last 4 kilos. But I like to get... I've never been one for cutting too much water weight. Some guys will cut 8 and 9 kilos in water, and I think that's it gets to a dangerous point. And I think that's maybe having my fitness background. I know the body a lot. I know how the body works. And if you're not very clever in putting that water and the minerals back in the body, you can really suffer. So I tend to cut no more than 3 or 4 kilos in water before the fight.
What's your strategy? I mean, I have a passing interest in traditional boxing. I remember reading Ali's biography. But with what you're doing, you know, and with traditional boxing, there's the, you know, tiring your opponent out and all that kind of stuff. What's your strategy when we're talking about this kind of martial arts?
Oh, ideally, I want to go in, hit him first time, knock him out, and that's me game over. So
it's as quick as possible, or is it?
I've always been quite a technical fighter, and I enjoy fighting. I enjoy the aspect of it. I enjoy being in the ring and having that nervous energy, I guess, so to speak. I want to try and wear the guy down. I want to wear him down. I want to try and...
In terms of land the most blows as early on as possible?
Yeah, big blows, just be relentless. I want to just keep going and going and going.
How many rounds?
This fight is 3 rounds. This is 3 2-minute rounds, full tie. So that's full tie rules, elbows and knees to the head and face. Traditionally tie...
And no padding?
No padding, no. So
did you have gloves?
No. Yeah, I have gloves, yeah. 10-ounce gloves.
Yeah.
We have 10-ounce gloves, we have a mouth guard and a groin guard, and that's it. It's all shin-on-shin contact.
This is real Colosseum gladiator
this
stuff.
Is, yeah, this Muay Thai brutal, mate. And it's, I always tell people to, when they ask about Thai, or they want to bring their kids to Thai, or they want to start doing Muay Thai, so just go home and watch some stuff on YouTube. Go and watch some Thai fights.
And if there's no clear knockout, is it like a points, technical points as well?
Points decision. So every round scored out of 10. So you'll get a 10.
What are the judges looking for?
They're looking for technicality. They're looking for you to stay busy. They're looking for landing blows. You've got to land big shots that count, not just landing stuff that's not going to cause any damage. You want to really land shots that are going to make a difference. And again, it's just staying busy, mate.
I just thought you used phrases. You want to, what did you say? Not land blows that do any damage, but blows that make a difference.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So you want to, when you land a shot, you want to see the guy physically curl in pain, or you want to see him react to the shot. You can really land a shot in somebody's leg and they won't flinch at all. And the judge will look at, well, clean shot, but nothing really happened.
Oh, that's for points. You're talking, you mentioned that because that's in terms of scoring the points.
The points aspect, right. So it's got to look good for the judges as well.
Okay.
Ideally, you now never want to leave it in the... Combine that with the accent, mate. It's hard to grasp.
No. It was just the phrase about you don't want to, you know, like I said earlier, nothing that what did you say? Nothing that hurts him, but something that makes a difference.
Yeah, you want to make a difference with a shot.
You were talking about the ability to score the point.
That's the thing with Thai scoring. It's you can land a big shot and the guy won't move or won't flinch. And the judge will look, well, he's landed, but nothing really came from it. But if you land a big shot and he reacts to it and he's like really wincing in pain or he's backing off, then that looks really good. But I guess every fighter wants to go out and you want to have a few shots and land the big one that gets a knockout and that's you and you can go and celebrate with your friends. But it's interesting, mate. It definitely is. You should come and see it. Come and watch the fight.
Yeah. Well, the good crowd at the kind of events?
Especially these events. The Coastal Warfare shows are big deal. Some of the biggest ones on the coast, run by Joe Hilton. He's been running the Muay Thai scene over in the coast for a long, long time. He's one of the main men over here. So it's his promotion, and Corey Elgin's Larkin. I'm not sure what the number will be. The crowd, maybe a couple of thousand, maybe, if you get size-wise.
I want to talk about your journey from Scotland to here.
Yeah.
And setting up your own gym. And I know you set up a gym which, you know, from the outside looking in, well, we spoke about, you know, it grew really quickly and it was great.
Yeah.
Then you had some challenges and a couple of hurdles and then you're kind of down for a little bit, but then you come back.
Yep. Again, it comes from the fighter's attitude. Like myself and Simon are both martial artists. We're both fighters. We've never given up on anything in my life, never quit anything. So When we did have those little challenges that we had with the last place, it just it made us more hungry to not be put down, you know. And
but it was such a blow for a new business, because I also people that listen to these podcasts are people that, that start businesses, mm-hmm. and they run into some kind of hurdle.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, man, you know, this is – they either chuck it all in. But, I mean, this was a really – you had a gym on top of a, another premise. We don't need to go into the details, but and like I said, the numbers grew and it seemed like it was really successful and you just kind of hit your straps and and then there was like some complaints and noise and it had to be all closed down. And
we had some – it started off really well and everybody knew – everybody involved from the owners of the building to the real estate, they all knew what we were doing. We were having a fitness studio in the junction above another premises and everybody was fine with that. They knew exactly what we were doing. We got all the approvals needed. We'd done everything we had to do.
Yeah, all the boxes ticked.
Everything was ticked, mate. And all of a sudden, it didn't suit the premises below us with the noise. And we're trying to say, well, you knew what was happening here. You've had it pretty good for the last 4 years with nobody above you. Now you've got somebody, there's going to be a bit of noise. And we went out of way. We did change a lot of stuff so it wouldn't be detrimental to their business and stuff. But it just kept, every time we bent over backwards, they'd ask us to do more and more. And it just so happened that numbers were getting bigger, we were getting more popular. And that was it from the beginning. We wanted to do something that wasn't really happening in Noosa. We wanted to do, there's lots of chain gyms here, which are great, and there's lots of them about. And we wanted to do something a little bit different. We wanted to have the fitness aspect, but combining with the martial arts aspect that we both have. And it was going great guns. And then all of a sudden, these issues with the landlord and the tenants below us, and it was just issue after issue, and it all came to a head.
And a business like yours too, which is about, you know, people either become members or they you know, because it's geographically it's convenient,
yep.
and you're there and they can come and see you. So then the plug's pulled or the rug's pulled out from underneath you,
yep.
And then tell me about, you know, you had to kind of pick yourselves up.
Yes.
You were going to, you know, the thing was you're going to lose members as well not operating for a number of months.
And that's totally understandable. I mean, these people are coming to get fit. I mean, there's an element of loyalty where people will follow you and will back you up. But you can't expect that from everybody. People want to train, they want to keep moving, they want to keep going. And all of a sudden you've had your premises closed and you're like, oh, what are we going to do? So we moved all the stuff we could to the beach, and we were training the beach, training outdoors, and we're just
improvising.
Yeah. That's it. And we didn't want to stop doing what we're doing. We had so much momentum going into it, and then we thought, right, nah, we're not letting it get to us. We're going to keep moving. And there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes with regard to the lawyers and solicitors and stuff, and everything that was done to us was totally illegal. It was totally out of order, and that's why we ended up getting where we are, because people intervened and said, well, look, you can't do this. The guys have done nothing wrong. They've followed all the orders. So we came to an agreement that we'd move out of that premises. And then we found the new one, which we're in now, which was perfect. You know, we found this big shed and it was exactly what we wanted from day one. Myself and Simon knew when we started working with each other, about a month in, we knew we'd have our own place someday. We would have something to really to go get.
But the first place was your own place. I mean,
Yeah. Well, I was working with an investor.
But I mean, to have built up a business like that, and then again, as you said, because partial to part of this story, you didn't do anything wrong. You were transparent. Everything happened. Yep. And then you know, to have a business like that and lose the members and then be out of action for a number of months.
Yeah,
was there a point though? I mean, I know you talked about how tough Glasgow was, but was there a point at all you thought, I'm just going to go home? Or did you ever think like that at all?
I would be lying if I said there wasn't low points. There was definitely low points where you're thinking, especially because I was managing the gym from day one. I was in total control of the project. I had to find all the builders and renovations. I had to do everything myself. That was the deal, that I would run it and be the manager of the gym and run everything from day dot. And I had put so much in. I had put so much effort. I'd never worked so hard in my life. I was to the point of broken. But then the deposits we took from it were amazing, so that's why we kept going and kept going. But then to have it pulled out, there was definitely times where I thought,
it seems unfair.
That was it especially, mate.
Because you do everything you can and you're transparent about it, and then it's kind of over. And it's like, well, I haven't done anything wrong.
That was the hardest thing to take, the fact that we'd done nothing wrong, the fact that we had done it just felt like people were, everyone was against us.
Yeah.
And I've never been a poor me person. I've never been, never been one of those, I've never been that kind of person. It was always just, right, okay, dust myself down and get back on. And it was, I'd actually, during the time, during the point where it was like one of the lowest points, I was reading about some gym owners that who I really aspire to be like out in America, like martial arts, like Jackson Winkamp, and there was a John Danaher, and jiu-jitsu coach and stuff. And a lot of these guys, reading their story, their first few gyms failed with regard to issues with landlords or fire damage or this. And these guys have got some of the biggest names in martial arts now. But to think, to read their story and go, okay, these guys had issues two or three times and it wasn't their fault. It was not an issue with coaching or numbers. It was just people were trying to make it difficult for them. And I thought, well, if those guys can do it, we can do it. You know, I've always had a good work ethic, always worked hard, get my teeth into things and I won't let go, I'll go for it. And then I knew that it was just another little thing that was sent to try me, mate. And, you know, I'm a huge believer in whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And these little things are sent to try your patience, you know, and I just kept getting my head down and getting on with it. But there was definitely points where we thought, why is it getting harder? Because you just thought we'd go over a hurdle. Another one would come up.
Yeah, I understand.
Another one, and it was left. People were just taking kicks as when we were down, and we thought, well, that's okay.
You need the groin protector.
Yeah, I was lacing my gloves up, mate. I'm like, somebody's getting it.
Now, you mentioned, so 2014, you're still in Glasgow because you were working closely with athletes from all over the world for the Commonwealth Games. When did you come to Australia, and was Noosa your first
protocol? Yeah, luckily, I arrived in November 2014. I had, the lucky thing was I had a few of my mates had moved out to Australia prior to me coming out, and they were working oil and gas and stuff, and they based themselves in Noosa because when you've got time off,
they're like fly in, fly out
stuff. So when you've got your time off, what better place to spend it in Noosa? So it was actually, funnily enough, during the games I was talking to some of the Aussie athletes. I was got to work quite closely with the Aussie team and work with guys like John Stephenson and stuff, who we became really friendly with. And I said, yeah, I'm moving to this place called Noosa, and they were like, no way. Well, why? I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about Noosa. I just knew I was going to Australia. I was packing my stuff up, moving and going. And other than what my mates had told me about how nice it was, these guys were like, "This is beautiful. This is it's the place to be." And
when you first landed here, again, understanding the really tough, gritty kind of childhood you had in Glasgow, the industrialised kind of city, and then landing here. What time of the year was it? November.
Oh,
it would have been nice to go in the summer.
It was hilarious.
Oh, it wasn't.
I arrived, mate, and I came off the plane and it was bouncing with rain. It was like torrential, like not
very
even
odd.
Yeah, not even a spit. It was like and I left Glasgow in November in a cold but sunny days, and I arrived and my mate picked me up from the airport and he was like, honestly, it's not like this all the time. It was just torrential rain. By the time we got from Brisbane to Noosa, it stopped, and then that was me. I started to have a little walk about Noosa. We went down the river. He showed me where we were staying in different parts of Noosa, and I thought, yeah, right then. And that was the funny thing. There was no holiday period. There was no transition. There was no, like, oh, this is a holiday. After day two, I knew this is where I wanted to be. It was like I just picked my life up and moved. There was no...
Did you come out by yourself?
Yeah.
Just you?
Just me, mate. Just me, yeah. And luckily I had my mates here. I had two of my best mates already here. One of my other good mates we grew up with is out in WA in Perth. So I had a good standing here, and the boys had came out before me had met a lot of good people. And so I came into a really great environment, met some amazing people. And that helped. That helped. Coming from not knowing anybody to having your best mates here and some good people, that was a massive...
You an Aussie citizen?
Not yet.
How long does that take?
Still going through the whole process with the visa, mate. I was quite unlucky if it came to getting my second part of my visa, and just as the Turnbull government came in.
Yeah, right.
So that they changed a lot of the stipulations with visas now. So I've just kind of timed it wrong, basically.
Have they?
Another kick in the nuts, mate. But it's nothing's ever going to happen.
I ask
easy.
You some question about Don Bradman. What's going on with that? What is that? I didn't realise there was a change with the.
Yeah,
visa applications.
Yeah, they've changed it over to make it harder for people to stay here. Making it harder.
You want to stay?
Oh yeah, yeah. My whole life's here now. You know, I'm wanting my second business. My whole life's here. I've met my partner here. Some of my best mates are here now. I've made mates for life. So it's like the thought of having to go was is horrible, mate. And that's another thing that's been challenging, like, with that all going on in the background, with the visa thing constantly going on, and in the new
is
business.
Is it an issue? Like,
It's been, again, been made hard for me. I don't know. I've obviously done something to annoy somebody somewhere in life, mate. I don't know what I've done, but somebody's just testing my patience. But you know, I keep smiling. There's no point. I told something a long time ago, and there's no point worrying about something that hasn't happened yet. Because all you got to do is
I think about that too. Like, worry's just wasted energy, really, isn't it?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah. You're stressing yourself out for nothing.
All right.
So,
but you've done it before. Like I said, it's about that resilience and, you know, the kind of industry that you're involved in and bouncing back and overcoming challenges. Billy, I really appreciate you coming in and telling us a little bit about your story.
Awesome, mate. Thank you very much, John.
Billy Murphy there on Conversations in Noosa. I hope you enjoyed listening to that. If you did, please feel free to share the podcast on your social media channels. And if you listen to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Wooshka, don't forget to rate and review the podcast for me. I'd really appreciate it. Remember, there are two fresh podcasts every week, every Monday and every Thursday on the In Noosa Magazine website, innoosamagazine.com.au/conversations. Until next time.